Chapter 29. Holden. Holden stood on a low hill overlooking First Landing, trying to enjoy the beauty of the planet while his brain chewed on the half-dozen insoluble problems that he was somehow supposed to solve. The usual dust had been tamped down by the recent run of gentle rains. It made the town look clean, well-tended, peaceful. Above, the sky was a stunning indigo blue, with just the faintest streamers of high-altitude clouds breaking it up. His hand terminal was reporting the temperature as 22 degrees Celsius with a gentle 4-knot wind coming out of the northeast. The only thing that would have made it better was Naomi there with him, or at least back safe on the Rossi. But that would have made it a lot better. "I miss planets," Holden said, closing his eyes and facing the sun.
"I don't," Amos replied.
He'd been so quiet during their afternoon walk that Holden had sort of forgotten he was there.
"You never miss a breeze, the sun on your skin, a gentle rain?"
"Those are not the parts of planetary life that imprinted on my memory," Amos replied.
"Want to talk about it?" Holden asked.
"Nope."
"Okay."
Holden didn't take the mechanic's refusal personally. Amos had, as he described it, a lot of past in his past. He didn't like people digging around there, and Holden was the last person to pry. Holden already knew more about Amos's brutal upbringing on Earth than he wanted to.
"Better head back, I guess," Holden said after a few more pleasant moments in the breeze. "Might have an RCE reply to my requests."
"Yeah," Amos snorted. "If the RCE bigwig sent a reply seconds after receiving your message, they should be arriving just about now."
"I won't let your facts about light delay get in the way of my optimism."
"Not much does."
Holden was silent for a long moment. He licked his lips.
"If they say no," he said, "if they're committed to letting Murtry hold on to her, I'm going to have to make a decision about whether she's more important than keeping this place from devolving into a shooting war."
"Yep."
"I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to pick, too."
"Yep."
"There will be people who think I'm very selfish."
"True,"
Amos said.
"But also, fuck 'em. They're not us. That us and them thing is the problem at the base of all this,"
Holden started. But his hand terminal interrupted, a high-priority alarm sounding. It was the alert reserved for crew person in danger. Naomi, he thought. Something happened to Naomi.
Amos took a few steps toward Holden, his brow furrowing and hands clenching into fists.
His mind had gone to the same place. If something had actually happened to Naomi, there was no way he'd be able to stop Amos from killing Murtry this time. Probably he wouldn't even try.
"Holden here," he said, trying to keep his voice level.
"Cap, we got a problem,"
Alex replied. His voice was shaky, terrified. Holden had flown with Alex through half a dozen battles. Not even when the missile trails filled the sky around them had he ever heard his pilot panic. Whatever it was bad.
"Is she hurt?"
"What? Who?
You mean Naomi?"
"Naomi's fine as far as I know," Alex replied.
"You're in deep shit, Captain."
Holden looked around. First Landing looked quiet. A new shift of belters were boarding the carts that would take them to the mine. A few people walked the streets, going about their business. The two RCE security people on patrol were chatting amiably with a local and sipping some sort of hot drink from a thermos. The only violent thing happening within line of sight was a mimic lizard slowly dragging a stomach-engulfed bird back through its gullet.
"Okay," Holden said. "Something blew up on the other side of the planet," Alex said, talking fast enough to stumble over his words, most of his drawl disappearing. "Absolutely flattened an island chain over there. I mean, it's like someone dropped a rock, kill the dinosaurs kind of thing. Shockwave is heading around the planet right now. You have about 6 hours, maybe."
Amos had traded his angry face in for one of genuine surprise. It wasn't an expression he wore often, and it made him look vaguely childlike.
6 hours until what, Alex? Holden said. Details, please.
Figure 200-300-kilometer-an-hour winds, lightning, torrential rains. You're far enough inland to avoid the 3-kilometer-high tsunami.
Basic wrath of God package, minus drowning, Holden said, reaching for humor to hide his rising fear. How certain is this?
Captain, I'm watching the other side of the planet rip itself to shreds right now. This isn't a prediction. This is thousands of clicks of planet between you and the apocalypse disappearing fast.
Got some video to send?
Yep, said the pilot.
Got fresh underwear for after you watch it?
Send it anyway. I may need it to convince the locals. Holden out.
So, Cap, Amos said, what's the plan?
I haven't got a clue.
Run it again,
Murtry said after Holden played the apocalyptic video Alex had shot with the Rocinante's telescopes. Holden, Murtry, and Carol Chiwiwi were in the town hall. Holden's terminal synced up to the big screen hanging on one wall. Holden obliged and played through the recording a second time. Again, the big island disappeared in a flash of light and a column of fire. Again, the other islands vanished under a massive wall of water, and then the spreading clouds of steam and ash. Again, the shockwave raced away from the center of the explosion, dragging massive waves behind it. As the video played, Murtry talked quietly on his hand terminal with someone. Carol shook her head gently, as though it were possible to deny the evidence playing on screen. The video ended, and Murtry said,
This is matching our data. The geoengineering group thinks there was some kind of fission reaction down near the bottom of the ocean.
Holden prickled at the implication he might be lying about something so serious, but held his tongue.
Like a bomb?
Carol Chiwiwi said.
Or an alien power plant failing out, Murtry said. Can't really speculate.
How quickly can we evacuate?
Carol said, her voice surprisingly firm for a person who just looked Armageddon in the eye.
That's what we're here to talk about, Holden said.
What's our best plan for protecting the colony?
Evacuation is one option, but we're down to a little over 5 hours now.
Evacuation won't work, Murtry said, at least using our shuttle. The window's too tight. We'd be taking off in the face of that shockwave with turbulence and atmospheric ionization doing its best to knock us out of the sky. Better to survive down here and still have a shuttle available afterward for relief.
Holden frowned and nodded. I hate to admit it, but I agree. Alex says he can't put the Rossi down and get it back off the ground before the blast. And if we do try to evacuate, we'll probably have riots on our hands. How do you tell someone that their kid doesn't get to leave on the shuttle?
Riots won't be a problem, Murtry said. The calm of his voice was chilling.
How do we protect everyone?
The entire colony, Holden said, again choosing to ignore the provocation.
There's mines, Amos said.
He hovered over Holden like an anxious parent. He started doing that whenever Murtry was around.
No, Carol shook her head. It's low ground. It'll flood if we get too much rain.
I think we should count on anything that can go wrong doing so, Holden agreed. So, no pits and caves that can fill up with water.
I'm thinking the ruins.
Murtry leaned back in his chair, frowning.
What makes you think those'll hold up to 300-kilometer-an-hour winds?
Honestly?
I have no good reason to believe that, Holden said.
But they've been there a very long time.
That's what I've got. Hope that if they made it this far, they can make it through what's coming.
Better than those huts you guys are living in,
Amos added with a beefy shrug.
I can kick down any building in this town in 10 minutes.
Murtry leaned back even farther in his chair, staring up at the ceiling and making clicking noises with his tongue. After a few seconds, he said,
Okay, that's as good a plan as any I have. We just need to outlive that initial shockwave. What comes after will be bad, but we'll be able to take any survivors off through it. So, let's play it your way. I'll get my people moving. Better get the word out.
Carol, find as many people as you can to spread the news, Holden said. Make sure everyone brings as much food and water as they can reasonably carry, but nothing else. The planet's on fire. Can't stop to save mementos.
I'll give her a hand, Amos said.
We're on the clock, Holden reminded them, punching an alert into his hand terminal as he said it. I want to see all of you inside the structure in 4 hours, not a minute later.
We'll try, Carol said.
It took longer to move the colonists than Holden had hoped. Each person told had to express shock and disbelief. Then they had to have a conversation about their surprise. Then they had to have a conversation about what items they'd bring with them. Some argued about bringing personal items, each one sure that their particular case was unique. Every time Holden heard it happen, he wanted to start shouting. It was the blue sky and gentle breeze. The disaster just wasn't real to them. Not when they could look out across the sky and see nothing but wisps of cloud. They were playing along because Holden and Carol and Murtry were in charge, and you did what the people in charge asked you to do unless there was a compelling reason not to. But Holden could see the disbelief in their eyes, hear it in every silly delay and argument. Across the street, a man was clutching a bundle of clothing under one arm while he dragged a large plastic container of water behind him. Amos walked over and traded a few smiling words with the man. The man vigorously shook his head and tried to walk off. Amos grabbed the bundle of clothes out of his hands and threw them on top of a nearby hut, then picked up the water and shoved it into the man's arms. The man started to argue. But Amos stared him down with a vague smile, and eventually the other man turned and left, trudging after the others headed to the alien ruins.
Captain?
A tentative voice said to his back. He turned around to find Elvi Okoye smiling up at him, a large sack thrown over one shoulder.
Hello, he said. What have you got there?
It's blankets. Faez and Sudyam and I are bringing all the blankets we had at the compound. The temperature's sure to drop significantly once the debris cloud covers us. The nights will get cold.
Good thinking. We should probably tell some more people to bring blankets.
So, she added, still with her unsure half-smile, I wanted to ask for some help for the chemical sciences group.
Help?
The chemical analysis deck is pretty heavy, and they're having trouble moving it. One or two more people would make the job a lot easier.
Holden laughed in disbelief.
We won't be doing science up there, Elvi. Tell them to ditch it and carry water or food instead.
It makes water, she said.
They can carry...
It makes what?
It can sterilize and distill water, she said,
nodding as if by doing so she could make him agree faster.
We might need it, for when, you know, the bottles run out.
Yes, he said, feeling like an idiot.
Yes, she agreed, smiling helpfully.
Amos, he yelled. Find someone to help you, then follow her. There's a big piece of equipment they need help moving.
Equipment? Amos frowned. Wouldn't food or water be?
It makes water, Holden and Elvi said at the same time.
Roger, Amos said and left in a hurry.
Holden noticed that a subtle darkening of the sky had begun. The sun was still high. It was barely past midday and into the early afternoon, but the sunlight was shifting toward red, and the world was darkening along with it, as though a beautiful sunset were starting about 5 hours early. Something about the change sent a shiver up his spine.
Get up there, Holden said, giving Elvi a gentle push toward the alien towers. Go, now. Tell your people to hurry.
To her credit, she didn't argue. Just took off at a dead run back toward the RCE science compound. All around him, the colonists were moving faster, arguing less, and casting the occasional frightened glance at the sky. Holden hadn't been inside the alien structure since he'd looked it over as a crime scene.
It had the same eerie and inhuman aesthetic sense he'd seen before. First on Eros after the infection, and later on the ring station at the heart of the gate network. Curves and angles that were subtly wrong and yet weirdly beautiful at the same time. He tried to imagine what use the protomolecule masters had made of the buildings, and failed. He couldn't picture them housing machines like a factory, nor could he picture them as dwellings, scattered with furniture and personal items. It was as if, standing empty as they were, they still fulfilled whatever alien function they'd always been meant to serve. It was also where Baja Merton and the others had hidden their explosives, where they'd killed the security team. The bloodiest crimes that had been committed on the planet had all been centered right here, where they were all going now. "Give me another recount," Carol Chiwiwi said to her aides. "Who are we missing? Find out who we're missing." She'd been doing head counts of the colonists ever since she'd arrived, almost the last person in. They kept coming up with new numbers over and over as stragglers drifted in and people milled around. It was an impossible task, but Holden respected her commitment to ensuring they left no one behind. The RCE science team huddled together in one rounded corner of the building's large central room, Elvie among them. Several scientists were fiddling with a large machine, getting it ready to purify large quantities of water, Holden hoped. Lucia drifted across the room to exchange a few words with Elvie, her son Jacek in tow. Holden breathed a sigh of relief they'd both made it. Baja would be up on the Rosinante going out of his mind with worry, and Holden was happy he'd be able to report that they were as safe as he could make them. "Hey, Cap," Amos said, coming out of a side room with several colonists trailing. "We got a problem." "Another one? Worse than the cataclysmic storm heading our way?"
"Related, I'd guess you'd say," Amos replied. "We've been going through the headcounts, and it looks like the Dalkey family is missing."
"We're sure about that?"
"Pretty," Amos said with a shrug.
Carol saw them talking and made her way through the crowded room toward them.
100% sure, she said. "Clay Dalkey was in town picking up supplies when we warned him. He headed out to get his wife and daughter. They've got the house farthest outside of town. I should have sent someone along, but I was stupid."
"You had plenty to do," Holden reassured her. "How far from here is the Dalkey place?"
3 clicks, Amos said. "I'm about to head out with these guys and see if we can find them."
"Wait a minute," Holden said. "I'm not sure you can make a 6-kilometer round trip with the time we have left, let alone look for someone."
"Not leaving that little girl out there, Chief," Amos said.
He kept his voice carefully neutral, but Holden could hear the barest presentiment of a threat hiding in it.
"All right," Holden said, giving in. "But let me call up to the Rosie and get an update. At least let me do that."
"Sure," Amos said agreeably. "Someone's looking for a poncho for the kid right now, anyway." Holden headed out of the main room and through the confusion of smaller chambers around it, trying to find the entrance. The alien building was a maze of connecting passages and rooms. As he walked, he pulled out his hand terminal.
"Alex, this is Holden. You listening?"
The sound coming out of the terminal was filled with static from the atmosphere's heavy ionization, but Holden could still hear Alex when he said,
"Alex here, what's the word?"
"Give me an update. How close are we?"
"Oh, boss, you just need to look west."
The fear in Alex's voice was audible even over the heavy static. Holden stepped out of the alien tower's main entrance and looked toward the slowly setting sun. A curtain of black covered the horizon as far as the eye could see. It was moving so quickly that even from dozens of kilometers away, it appeared to hurtle toward him. A black, roiling cliff shot through with lightning. The ground beneath his feet trembled and shook, and Holden remembered that sound moved more quickly through a solid than through the air. The vibration he felt now was the sound of all that fury coming through the earth like an early warning. Even as he thought it, a rising roar started in the west.
What's it look like?
Amos had come into the antechamber and was pulling a light backpack on. His colonist friends stood behind him, their faces a mixture of hope and fear.
It's too late, big man, Holden said, looking west and shaking his head. It's way too late.
He wasn't sure, as he said it, if he meant for the Dalkies or for all of them.